As he was cutting the last hog free, Sarge walked up with a palmetto stem, the end sharpened to a nice point. With a huge smile on his face, he reached out and poked Mike in the ass with the stem. Mike jumped and tripped over one of the hogs before catching himself. He looked back at Sarge, rubbing his ass.
"You old bastard! I thought I backed into the wire!"
We all started laughing. Sarge crowed,
"I knew you would. That's why I did it."
Mike managed to jump over the top strand without touching it and snatched the palmetto stem from Sarge's hand. Sarge laughed and ran off before Mike could poke him in the ass with it. Jeff came back from the river with the rods and a bunch of bluegills on a piece of paracord. He held the string up for everyone to see. Little Bit ran up. She just had to touch them. "How long did it take to catch them?" I asked, as Little Bit ran her fingers over their scales.
"Not long, actually. They were biting real good," Mike said.
Little Bit ran over, Mel and Bobby behind her. She was jumping up and down and asked, "Can we stay here? It's fun." I smiled and rubbed her head.
"She likes it," I said, looking at Mel.
Mel frowned. "She's only 8, and thinks of it like a camping trip. If we move here, who knows how long we'll be stuck."
"Babe, this is just a precaution. If we come here, it's because our home is no longer safe. It'll be better than sitting under some palm fronds in the woods.
I still don't like it. We need to try and stay home."
"Mel, we need to wake up to the reality of the situation. You do realize what is going on around you, don't you? You know how many people are living in wretched conditions right now. No power at all, no clean water, no food, no safety. We still have all of that. If we come here, we only lose running water." I pointed at the creek, "but it's right there, and it's not ditch water. We have the ability to make it safe to drink. There are probably millions of people right now who pray every night for that." She didn't say anything else. Instead, turning her back to me to help unload the trailer. Everyone pitched in as we unloaded it. A lot of what we brought this trip could be stored outside, so we put it under the cabin. It was about 3 feet off the ground, so there was plenty of room. After making sure the guys didn't need anything else, we started to head out. Little Bit ran over to Sarge.
"Can I ride with you?"
Sarge knelt down to get eye to eye with her.
"I don't know. Did you ask your daddy?"
They both looked at me. Fortunately for me, Mel spoke up before I did.
"No, you ride with us. It's safer."
Sarge rubbed her head.
"Sorry, sweetie. Maybe next time."
He walked over to Mel. "You know I wouldn't do anything to hurt her." Mel smiled.
"It's not that. It's not you."
She turned to look at the buggy, specifically the saw hanging from its mount. "There's just a lot of dangerous stuff on there." Sarge considered and then smiled.
"I guess there is."
Heading home, I asked the girls what they thought about the cabin. Of course, Little Bit wanted to move there immediately. She said it would be like living like the boy from the story of My Side of the Mountain. Taylor was all for it, too. She liked the adventure of it.
"How about you, Leanne? What do you think?" Mel asked as she turned in her seat.
She shrugged her shoulders in reply, looking out the window. I adjusted the rearview mirror so I could see her.
"What's up, kiddo?"
She was still looking out the window as she wiped tears off her cheek. Mel reached back and brushed her hair out of her face.
"What's wrong? We aren't sure we're going to have to go there yet."
"It's not that," she sniffled, finally looked at Mel.
"It's everything. I want things back to normal. I want to go back to school. I want to see my friends. I want the internet back."
She was really crying now.
"It's okay. At least we have the iPad to play with,"
Little Bit said, trying to reassure her sister.
"What do I have to look forward to? Everything is ruined now. My life is over."
Taylor reached out an arm to pat her sister on the shoulder. I couldn't help but feel for Leanne. In a way, she was right. All those things were gone for now, though probably not forever. But to a 15-year-old, it may as well be forever.
"Hey, it's not all gone forever, just for now. Everything is still here, nothing is gone.
It's going to take some time, but all that will come back. It just has to be fixed.
She rubbed her eyes and looked at me.
Really?
You think it will all be fixed?
I didn't want to lie to her, but at the moment, I was more worried about her mental state. The thought that she may be slipping over the edge really worried me.
I know it will. Just gonna take some time, baby. And look at it this way. We're on an extended vacation of sorts.
Some vacation?
What, you don't like our post-apocalyptic theme? I asked with a smile. Looking at her in the mirror, she cracked a bit of a smile back at me.
At least there aren't zombies, Taylor said.
Don't talk about zombies, they freak me out, Little Bit shouted, hovering her ears.
Talking with the girls, I wasn't really watching the road. It was Sarge calling me on the radio that got my attention.
Morg, we got company ahead. Stop here and wait. Let me go see what's going on.
Roger that, I replied, slowing to a stop. Ahead, at the intersection of highways 439 and 42, two old trucks were blocking the road.
You good on that saw, Danny? Sarge asked.
I hope so. If anything happens, open up on them. Try to keep it to 15 to 20 round bursts. Bobby, take that carbine there.
She radioed back. I don't know how to use that thing.
Let's hope you don't need to use it. You just need to look like you do.
Bobby pulled the rifle over into her lap. Danny turned to show her where the safety was and reminded her to keep the muzzle pointed out the side of the buggy.
Daddy, what's going on? Taylor asked, fear creeping into her voice.
I don't know. There are some people up ahead. Sarge is going to see what they want.
Mel looked out the window and whispered to me.
I'm worried. What's going on?
Dad, I'm scared, Little Bit said.
Everyone just calm down. There's nothing to worry about yet. Just keep an eye out, I said, as I eased the truck ahead a bit to get a better view around Sarge's buggy. I could see Danny sitting behind the saw and another muzzle sticking out from behind him. Sarge stepped out of his buggy, M4 slung across his chest, and approached the four men standing by the two trucks. One truck was an old K5 Blazer. The other was an old Dodge Power Wagon. The Power Wagon was a faded green. It reminded me of the ones the Florida Game and Fish used when I was younger. The Blazer still had the military-style camo paint job. The two trucks were parked nose-to-nose on the center line of the road, blocking both lanes. Seeing Sarge get out alone, I stepped out of the truck.
Stay here and keep your eyes open.
Where are you going? Mel asked.
I'm just going to back up the old man. You'll be able to see me.
Danny got out of the car, too. We walked up and stopped about 5 feet behind Sarge, just so they would know he wasn't alone. The four men were standing shoulder to shoulder across the center line of the road, each of them with an AK clone of some variant, with matching chest rigs full of magazines.
Evening, fellers.
There was no response. Once Sarge was within 10 feet of them, an older man with a full gray beard held out a hand.
That's close enough.
Sarge looked each of them in the eye, holding his gaze on each just long enough to make them uncomfortable. The two younger ones each broke his gaze, glancing sideways at the older men.
Are we going to stand here and stare at each other all night? Or are you going to tell me what this is all about? Sarge asked.
The man with the beard finally spoke.
I'm Calvin Long. We've seen you guys running up and down the road with all this hardware, and we're curious who you were and what you were up to.
Sarge raised his eyebrows.
I didn't know there was a law against running up and down the road.
Didn't say there was. Just said we were curious was all.
Sarge made a show of looking at the way the trucks were blocking the road.
There's friendlier ways to introduce yourself.
True, but you just can't be too careful these days.
Sarge smiled.
I guess you're right about that. I'm Linus Mitchell.
Jutting a thumb over his shoulder, he continued.
And these are some friends of mine, Danny and Morgan and their families.
Calvin leaned over to look past Sarge at Danny.
Some pretty heavy hardware you got there. You feds?
Sarge laughed.
No, sir. We're not feds.
I can assure you that. Actually, they're the reason we're out here. We're moving some of our supplies to a new location in case we have to bug out.
All right. I'm Calvin Long. This is my son Shane.
Placing his hand on the young man's shoulder as he introduced him. Their mother, too, are Dustin Talent and Cody Graves. They nodded as their names were announced.
I was telling Linus here that we saw you guys running around and were curious what you were up to. We've been watching the feds run around and have been trying to figure out what they're up to. It's about it. We've had some trouble, so just to be safe, we're setting up a fallback location.
Where are you guys from? I asked.
We're from Paisley, but with all the trouble, we've moved up to Pat's Island, Calvin replied.
Damn, that's a long ways to go, Danny said.
That's why we're up there, no one around, Dustin said.
Have you guys seen the camp? Cody asked.
Danny, Sarge, and I shared a glance.
Yeah, we've seen it. Looks like it's getting bigger, Sarge said.
It is. There's buses coming and going every day.
We see them on 19, Cody said.
Bringing people in or taking them out? Sarge asked.
Both, Calvin replied.
We haven't seen any of them down this way, Danny said.
They use 19 to go north and 40 for east and west movement.
Makes sense. It hits 95 to the east and 75 to the west.
They can go anywhere they want, Sarge said.
If you guys are staying all the way up there, what are you doing down here, and how did you see us? Danny asked.
I got the sense he wasn't buying their story.
We come down to the store in Altoona to trade for gas, and the old woman told us about you guys.
Thought we would introduce ourselves, Calvin answered.
You guys got any radios? Sarge asked.
No, sir. Wish we did. There's a group north of us that has a ham.
Hearing that struck me.
North of you guys?
Yeah, up near Salt Springs.
Over by Lake Kerr?
Cody's eyes narrowed.
You know him?
No, just heard some radio traffic is all. We got hams too.
After a moment of uncomfortable silence, Calvin spoke.
It was good to meet you guys. Maybe we'll run across each other again.
Look forward to it, Sarge said, as he dug into his blouse pocket, pulling out a notepad and scribbling something on it.
Here's a frequency in the 40 meter we monitor. Call sign is Stump Knocker.
Calvin took the paper and looked at it.
Thanks. Maybe we can keep in touch.
We need to. Not enough of us around right now, Sarge replied.
Calvin nodded and turned toward his truck with the others. And soon, they were loaded up and pulling away. We watched as they took the dirt road to the north of the intersection. I knew it ran to 445, a road that would eventually take them to Alexander Springs, the source of the river by the cabins. Once they were gone, we started walking back toward the vehicles. Sarge looked over at me.
You know something about that other group?
Maybe. On my way home, I ran into a group on the west side of Lake Kerr. They seemed like some pretty good guys. They used my radio to call a boat from the other side of the lake, but a couple helos showed up, and they engaged it after they shot up the boat.
Let me guess how that ended.
Pretty much exactly as you can guess. Only one of them got away. I ran and hid, wasn't about to try and engage two birds.
Ain't nothing wrong with running, Sarge said, slapping me in the back.
Let's stop by that store on the way in. I'll tell that old woman I'll bring that pig over in the morning.
Sounds good to me. I'm getting hungry, Danny said. I went back to the truck and climbed in.
What'd they want? Mel asked.
Just curious who we were and what we were doing.
Mel shook her head.
What gives them the right to stop us like that? What's wrong with people?
No harm, no foul. They're all right.
I think I may know someone in their group. Who knows? They could be helpful later.
Chapter 11. Mary gently shook Jess's shoulder.
Jess, you need to get up. We're on kitchen duty today.
She didn't respond.
Mary shook her again.
Come on, Jess.
I know you're upset, but you need to get up.
Mark stepped into the tent.
Singer followed closely behind him. Mary began to panic.
Hurry up, Jess.
As Mark approached them, he looked at Jess and asked Mary,
What's wrong with her? She's sick?
No, her brother died yesterday. He's been in the clinic since they got here. Singer came up from behind Mark.
What's going on? Get up. We have to be in the kitchen in 10 minutes.
Mark looked at Singer. Leave her alone today. She needs a day off.
Why? What's wrong with her?
Her brother died yesterday. Give her some time to grieve. Singer frowned and said to Mark,
People are dying every day. Doesn't mean you can give up your duties here.
Mark turned to look at her.
What's your name?
He asked, as he looked at the name tag sewn to her uniform.
That's right, Singer.
It's Joanne. Well, look here, Joanne. How many people in your family have died? Mary looked away to hide the smirk on her face. She certainly didn't want Singer to see it.
Irrelevant, deputy.
There was a definite smack of sarcasm to the last word. Well, for today she gets a pass. And if anyone doesn't like it, they can come see me.
What if I don't like it? She works for me.
Irrelevant, Agent Singer. Mark smiled and walked off before she could say anything. Singer looked at Mary with a sneer.
Get information. We have work to do, and you'll be scrubbing pots all damn day, she barked.
Mary quickly headed for the door. Singer watched her go, and once Mary was outside, Singer leaned down toward Jess.
No one tells me what to do. You got that? No one.
She waited for Jess to respond, and when she didn't, Singer snorted and headed for the door. Jess didn't care what they did to her right now. She was alone. Her entire family was gone. She could hear Singer outside shouting at the other women. She decided then that one day she would break that bitch's nose. And the thought of it made her chuckle to herself. It was the first time she'd laughed since her brother died. She sighed, reminiscing about when she'd laughed much more often. Soon enough, she drifted off to sleep. The dream she had was so vivid, she thought it was real. She looked at the clock. 10 minutes to finish. Answering the last question, she flipped the test over and went through the answers again, paying attention to the ones with stars beside them. Feeling confident, she took the answer sheet to the front of the class and dropped it in the basket on her professor's desk and headed for the door. It was Friday, and she was ready to party. Hopping on her bike, she headed across campus to her dorm, racing the storm that was coming in. She was back in her dorm, picking out clothes to wear that night, when a bolt of lightning lit up the room. Then the thunder came, a terrible bang, followed by a long, continuous, low rumble. She looked out the window, another bright flash. She closed her eyes, then the thunder came again. When she opened her eyes, it took a minute for her eyes to focus. After a moment, she realized it was just a dream. She was still in the camp and not at FSU. Jess closed her eyes again as tears started to run down her cheeks. After napping fitfully for another few hours, she got up to use the bathroom. The blinding sun stung when she opened the door, forcing her to shield her face with her hand. As she headed for the latrine, the sound of diesel engines caught her ear. A number of buses were pulling into the reception area. There seemed to be more and more of them lately. She stopped on a small platform and looked at the mass of people. They look worse every day, she thought, as the dirty, gaunt forms staggered off the bus. After using the toilet, she went to the sinks located on the opposite wall. Jess gripped both sides of the sink and looked in the mirror. She stared at the face looking back at her. It was almost unrecognizable. When she left FSU to go home for the break, she was young and attractive. While she was still young, she felt as if she had aged 30 years. There was nothing attractive about the face in the mirror. When she exited the bathroom, the buses were still there, engines idling. Usually, they left as quickly as they were unloaded. She could see the drivers and their security personnel standing around by the open doors.
What are they waiting for? She thought to herself. The thought had barely passed through her mind when a large group was led toward the buses. As long as she had been in the camp, Jess never saw anyone leave under any circumstances, so it was quite odd to see people lining up to board the buses. Was there a way out of this godforsaken camp? Back in the tent, the women were chatting away. Donna saw her and approached, holding little Chloe by the hand. "How you doing?" Donna asked, as she sat beside her on the cot, pulling the child up onto her lap. Jess scooted away from her a little and smiled. "Better. I'm feeling better." She smiled at the little girl and smoothed her hair. Donna smiled. "Well, if I can help, you just let me know."
"I will, thank you."
Donna rose and went to her bunk. Jess looked around for Mary and found her by the door, talking with a couple of the other women. Mary saw her and walked over, Fred closely behind her.
"How was work today?"
"It was work,"
Fred said, looking around the tent before reaching into her coat pocket.
"We didn't see you come for lunch, so I brought you something."
She produced two small corn muffins and handed them to Jess.
"Hey, thanks. I didn't realize I was hungry till now."
She took the muffins and put them under her pillow. Better to hide them, as it was illegal to smuggle food to the tents. Mary smiled and patted Jess's leg. "I was worried about you." Jess smiled. "I know." She paused for a moment. More buses came in today. The weird thing was, they loaded a bunch of people from here, and I think they took them away. Fred sat on the cot across from Jess.
"We knew something was going on. They made us fix a bunch of bag lunches."
She looked at Mary.
"They must have been for them.
I wonder where they went. Geez, I wish I could go with them. I want to get the hell out of here," Jess said quietly.
"I'm with you," Fred said.
Mary had a nervous smile.
"I don't know. It ain't so bad here."
She paused, looking off into the distance.
"A lot worse out there. I don't know about you, but I'd rather be free and have to find my own food and shelter than be stuck here," Fred said.
"Food and shelter aren't what I'm worried about," Mary said flatly. "There are some people around here who could help us." Jess nodded toward Donna, and she knows where they are. "My friends Morgan and Thad are from her neighborhood, and it's not far from here. They'll help us." "Even if we knew where their neighborhood was, how would we get out of here?" Mary asked.
"Where there's a will, there's a way," Fred said. "I'm heading back to my bunk, girls. I'm exhausted."
As Mary and Jess continued talking among themselves, they could hear buses pulling into the camp. Curious, they went outside to look down the hill at the reception area, which was filled with people.
"See, look at the group lining up over there. They're going to board the buses," Jess said, pointing.
Suddenly, a few people at the head of one line broke out and began to run toward the lead bus. The driver and security agent standing by the door were quickly overwhelmed as some began boarding the bus while others took the weapons from the security agent. Someone was standing in the door of the bus, waving at those still in their lines, urging them to get on. As the camp siren screamed to life, the two women quickly knelt down. Gunfire erupted down the hill. People began to scream and run.
"Oh my Lord, they shot a man!" Mary cried.
They watched as a body crumpled and fell out of the bus. Jess had her hands over her ears as gunfire filled the air. A thick cloud of black smoke erupted from the bus. It lurched forward and began to roll, sideswiping a row of porta-potties and knocking several of them over. Security forces scrambled around, firing at the bus. And then the shots ran closer. In what seemed like an instant, rounds started cracking over the heads of the three women.
"They're shooting into the camp!" Fred shouted.
Though they couldn't see the bus from their prone positions on the ground, they could hear it gaining speed. More security personnel ran past them toward the reception center. One stopped just past them and began firing at the bus, shooting across the camp to do so. He quickly ran off in the direction of the fleeing bus.
"I don't hear the bus anymore, do you?" Jess asked.
No, shooting is stopping too, Mary replied. Can't believe there was shooting into the camp. Could have killed someone.
Jess slowly rose as the siren began to wind down.
It looks like they did.
Mary rose to her feet beside her.
My gosh, Mary said, covering her mouth. There's so many of them.
A number of bodies were scattered around the buses in the reception tent. The security force was quickly rounding everyone up, leaving the wounded unattended.
Both those just arriving and those who were to board the buses to leave were being pushed into a larger group, their hands on their heads.
Mary shook her head.
Maybe you're right, Jess. We're no safer here than we are out there.
Chapter 12. Thad walked over to Reggie's house. They needed to go relieve the guys in the barricade. The old coach gun was tucked under his arm, and his hands were in his pockets as he shuffled along the dirt road. He found Reggie in the front yard, digging along the edge of the fence.
What are you after in there?
Reggie looked up from the shovel.
Morgan said you could eat kudzu roots. I'm looking for some.
You that hungry?
Not really. Just thought I'd see if I could find some and what they taste like.
You ready to go down?
Yeah. Let me get my rifle.
Reggie went in the house and came back with a pack and his rifle. They climbed onto his four-wheeler and headed for the barricade.
It's starting to warm up,
Thad shouted over his shoulder as they ran down the road.
Yeah, maybe we can start some plants and get a garden going soon. I'd love some fresh veggies. I'd love some fresh anything.
As they pulled up to the barricade, Ted and Jeff were in sight, leaning against some logs.
Well, if you can't get here on time, get here when you can, Jeff said with a smile.
Reggie laughed as he climbed off.
Dock my pay.
You guys see anything? Thad asked, as he laid the coach gun on the barricade.
Nah, just a couple of folks walking down the road. None of them seemed too interested in talking, Ted said.
Good. No news is good news.
Keep an eye out for the old man. He should be back here soon. It's getting dark, and I know he won't stay out after dark with the girls with him,
Ted said, as he and Jeff climbed onto their ATV.
Will do,
Reggie said, as he turned to face the road, leaning on the top log of the barricade. He and Thad stood in silence for a while, before Reggie started lamenting the past.
Know what I miss more than anything? You ain't gonna believe this.
Thad looked over.
What? Getting up and going to work. It's not that I particularly love my job, but I miss the routine of getting up and going out to work on some equipment. Shooting the shit with the operators and laborers, know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I miss driving my truck down the interstate, drinking a cup of coffee with the fellas while it was unloaded. He paused for a moment. And coming home to Anita and little Tony.
I wasn't trying to make you feel bad, sorry.
Reggie looked down at his boots and scuffed the gravel. Thad looked over and smiled.
You didn't. There's nothing I can do about it now.
Trying to turn the conversation around, he looked up with a smile and said,
Five Guys Burgers. Oh, man, don't even start on that, Reggie said, patting his stomach. 7-Eleven quarter-pound Big Bites, all covered in onions and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Them things will kill a man.
Nah, one of them and a Mountain Dew and I was set.
If I ate one of them, I'd still be burping it up the next day.
Reggie let out a loud laugh, slapping his belly.
Mama always said I had a cast-iron gut.
A sound in the distance stopped their laughter short. Thad stepped around the barricade, picking up the shotgun as he did. Looking back toward Altoona, he could see something in the road.
Is it them?
Thad squinted.
Yeah, looks like them.
I pulled the truck through the barricade.
How was the trip?
Reggie asked.
Fine, just fine. Mikey sends his love, Sarge said.
I bet.
You get them hogs penned up?
Reggie asked.
Yeah. We made a temporary pen for them, for now.
We'll have to get the permanent one done soon, I answered. Thad looked past me to Mel and the girls.
Hi, Miss Mill. You girls enjoy the ride?
I did, but it was scary, Little Bit said.
Hi, Thad. How are you doing? Mel replied.
I'm good.
What was scary? Thad asked, looking back at Sarge.
Nothing really. Some local boys from Pat's Island blocked the road on the way back. We had a talk is all.
What the hell were they doing all the way down here?
The old woman at the store in Altoona told them about us. They just wanted to check us out, Sarge said.
Well, this is interesting and all, but me and Bobby are going to go to the house and see what we can come up with for dinner. That is, if anyone's hungry, Mel said. That was met with a chorus of, yes, and of course. I told her to take the truck with the girls so they didn't have to walk.
Reggie, you got any problem trading that big boar for 75 gallons of gas? Sarge asked.
Nah, we need the gas, that's for sure.
Good, because I already made the deal. We gotta run it up there in the morning.
Fine with me.
Sarge leaned against the logs, kicking at the dirt, then looked up.
If you guys had to bug out of here, how long you think it would take you to pack what you need and get out?
Danny and I looked at each other.
I don't know. Depends on what we wanted to take, I guess, I said. Think you were never coming back. Whatever you took is all you'd have.
I never planned that way. My thoughts, Danny nodded his head toward me, and his, were to bug in. This is our Alamo.
And you saw what happened to them.
Bad example, you know what I mean.
I do, but it's a perfect example of what I'm getting at. You guys really need to start thinking about it. Get things ready, so that if you had to, you could be out of here in 15 minutes.
I could be out of here in 15 minutes, no problem, Reggie said.
Me too, Thad said.
I guess we need to work on it then, I replied.
You boys good here? Sarge asked Thad.
Yeah, we just got here a little bit ago.
Sarge looked at me.
You gonna bring him down some dinner?
Oh yeah, why don't you go down to the house and bring the guys over? I looked at my watch. Say, 7:30.
Works for me. You two hop in, and I'll give you a ride home.
Chapter 13. The house was full of bodies and voices. Everywhere you looked, someone was sitting with a plate in their hands. Seeing Sarge and Ted out of their body armor was a rarity. Looking over to the front door, I chuckled at the stacks of hardware, long guns, vests, and other accoutrements of our new life.
Hey, Mel! Sarge shouted.
Yeah? She asked, as she got up from the table. He was chewing a mouthful of food, holding the plate up and pointing at it.
These are some darn fine groceries.
Sarge was joined by everyone else, all nodding and adding their compliments.
I'm glad you like it, but don't get used to it. The stored food is getting pretty low, Mel said.
I think I'd eat a boot if you cooked it, Ted said, causing nearly everyone to laugh.
After making sure everyone had enough, I filled a couple of plastic containers of the casserole for Thad and Reggie, telling Mel I was going to run it down to them. Leanne looked up.
Can I come? I want to go too, Little Bit shouted.
Your sister asked first. You stay here, I told her.
Then looked at Leanne.
Come on, kiddo. You want to drive?
Her face lit up.
The truck?
No, the four-wheeler.
She wasn't nearly as excited about that, but replied,
sure.
Picking up my rifle, we went out, and I climbed onto the back of the Polaris. She got on in front of me and started it right up without any advice from me. As she put it in gear, I wrapped my arms around her and squeezed. She looked back laughing.
What are you doing?
I'm scared. Don't kill me.
When she goosed the throttle, I let out a little scream, and now she was really laughing. As we pulled up to the barricade, we were met by Thad's big smile.
Hey, Morg. Hey, Leanne.
Hi, Thad.
Hi, Reggie, she said, as she stepped off the machine.
You boys hungry?
Do we look hungry?
Reggie said with a grin.
I don't really know. I'd have to see what not hungry looks like first, and I know I've never seen that look before.
Thad let out a laugh.
You got that right.
Leanne walked out to the road. She was standing on the center line,
looking out toward the forest. I kept an eye on her, as me and the boys talked.
"Tell the ladies we said thanks for the grub," Reggie said, pulling the top off the container and smelling it.
"Goes without saying, man, really," I said.
"Well, tell him anyway," Thad said, with his mouth half full.
"Hey, Dad, look at this." We all looked up. Leanne was pointing down the road in the direction of the forest. The guys quickly laid their dinner aside, picking up their weapons, and we jogged out to the road.
"What is it?" I asked, a little panic cutting into my voice.
"Look at that glow. You can see it on the bottom of the clouds. What is that?"
We all looked down the road. Off to the left, way, way out there, was a very light glow. The complete absence of man-made light meant the nights were exceptionally dark.
"It's the camp," I said after a moment.
"They must be pretty busy out there to have it lit up like that," Thad said.
"Yeah, but busy doing what?" Reggie said.
"Dad?"
"Yeah?"
"Can I get my own gun?"
Her question was like one of those scenes in a movie, when they add the sound of a record needle being dragged across the vinyl. Thad and Reggie looked at me expectantly.
"Why do you want a gun?"
"I want to feel safer. I want to be able to help protect us all."
"You don't think there's enough people around with guns now?"
"It's not that. It's just, you guys are gone a lot. It would be better if me and Taylor had our own."
"You two been talking about this?"
"Yeah, I told her I'd ask. We're old enough. We can take care of everybody."
"You are old enough, but while I taught you how to shoot, I'm not the best teacher." I paused for a moment.
"Tell you what. We'll get one of Sarge's guys to give you both some pointers. I agree, it would be better to have you girls armed, and I'm glad you're ready for it."
She smiled.
"Thanks, Dad."
"Someone will be down later to take y'all's place," I said to Thad and Jeff.
"No problem. We ain't going anywhere," Thad said.
Leanne was on the Polaris. "Come on, Dad."
"You're being paged," Reggie said, pointing at her.
"I see," I said, looking at her, then turned back to him.
"Whatever happened to playing with Barbie dolls?"
"Hard to stop a raider with a Barbie," Thad said.
I shook my head and walked over to the Polaris and climbed on.
"Home, James," I shouted.
"Who?" she asked.
"Never mind, just go."
"Can I go fast?"
I wrapped my arms around her again and pushed my face into her back.
"Don't hurt me!"
She laughed as she opened the throttle up, kicking up gravel and speeding off down the road. By the time we made it back to the house, everyone was gone except Sarge. He was sitting on the porch, rubbing Meathead's belly. He looked up as Leanne started up the stairs.
"Your daddy let you drive?"
"Yeah."
"Thought I heard some squealing."
Leanne smiled and started for the door.
"Hey, Sarge, you think tomorrow you or Ted could spend some time with the girls, giving them some lessons on weapons handling?"
My question stopped her with her hand on the knob. Sarge looked over his shoulder at her, then back to me.
"You think they're ready to start carrying guns?"
I looked at Leanne and said, "I know they are." She gave me a big smile and opened the door.
"Yeah, I think we can do that. Let us get the first load ready to go, and while the truck's gone, I'll have Ted work with him."
"Sounds good to me. Can you and the guys handle things in the morning? I got something I want to do." Sarge looked up from the dog, much to Meathead's displeasure.
"Sure, what's up?"
"I'm going to look for a small trailer. I know someone has one around here somewhere.
If I can find it, I'm going to pull it over here and put my power plant in it. That way, if we have to move, we can hook up to it and go."
"Good idea. You need to get as much ready as you can."
"What makes you so sure they're going to come for us?"
Sarge looked up.
"'Cause it's what I'd do. That cop that lived here took up with the DHS. You said you and him didn't exactly see eye to eye, and he's already been here once with a warning. After our little interaction with them down at the camp, and their militia boys disappearing, this place has a target on it."
He rubbed Meathead's ears. If I had my way, we'd already be gone.
I stood in silence in the dark, thinking about what he said. The only sound was the dog's leg thumping. After a few minutes, Sarge stood up and stretched.
Tell Mel I said thank you for dinner again.
I already did, just want her to know I appreciate it. He paused, and even though it was dark, I could tell he was staring at me.
Morgan, we have to get out of here before someone dies. It's all I'm worried about right now.
He paused again.
Stay home tonight with your girls. We'll take care of the security.
You're right, Sarge. As bad as it is now, if we stay, it's only going to get worse. My family has been lucky up to this point. It's just going to be a hard transition.
I know it is. But you're not alone. We got you back.
I know, thanks. I really do appreciate it. Chapter 14. The next morning I was up early and woke the girls up as well. I wanted to spend a little time with them, and looking for the trailer together was a good excuse. Over breakfast, I told Mel and the girls that Ted would be coming down later to spend some time with them on weapon training.
We already know how to shoot, Taylor said as she finished her oatmeal.
I know, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Why can't you teach us? Mel asked.
Because I'm not a good teacher. I know how to use the weapons, and I know a lot of what he'll show you, but he'll probably show you things I don't know.
Too bad Mike isn't going to do it, Leanne said.
The statement caught me off guard. I looked up at her, and she looked at Taylor, which made me look at Taylor. Taylor realized we were looking at her.
What?
You'd rather have Mike teach us? Leanne said with a smile.
Nuh-uh, shut up, Leanne.
I looked at Mel, and she shrugged her shoulders at me.
Ted's going to do the instructing, I chuckled.
Or Sarge could do it.
No, Ted's good. We'll take Ted, Taylor said.
What? You don't like the old man?
Leanne looked over. He's kind of scary.
That made me laugh out loud.
Oh, just wait till I tell him that.
She looked at Mel.
Mom!
He's not going to say anything, Mel looked at me. Are you?
Nope. You're scarier than he could ever be.
Little Bit started to laugh, and Mel reached out to swat me, but I was too quick.
I'll remember that.
You girls ready? We need to go look for a trailer before you go to quick draw school.
They scrambled for the door and hopped in the truck.
Any house that we couldn't see into the backyard of from the road required us to get out and look around. Foot searches gave us a look into how people were living prior to what looked like very hasty departures. We made our way to the backyard of a house with a high privacy fence. After wandering around, Leanne called me over. Pointing at the ground, she asked, "What's that?"
A pile of bones lay where she pointed. I pushed them over with my boot.
"Looks like lots of things. Squirrels, rabbits." I trailed off, not wanting to go into further detail about what looked like cat and dog skulls.
"Why are all the bones broken?"
She was knelt down, looking intently at the pile.
"Well, they probably broke them open to get the marrow out."
"Oh, that's gross."
"It wasn't to the people who were living here. Just think of how hungry they must have been."
"Not me, no way." Little Bit was walking around a small metal shed in the corner of the yard as the wind shifted and the undeniable odor of human waste hit me. I realized it must be coming from the shed and yelled, "Hey, kiddo, stay away from there." I damn sure didn't want her to open the door and reveal the horrors that certainly lay inside. She looked back, pinching her nose.
"P.U., it stinks."
I followed Leanne over to what must have been the location of the cooking fire. The area around it was trampled and littered with slivers of wood. Another dirt path led to the patio. A couple of cinder blocks were arranged around it, with grill grates on top of them. Leanne was looking at the makeshift grill, then at the patio, and the large stainless grill.
"Why'd they do this if they have that big grill?"
"That's a gas grill. When they ran out of propane for it, which wouldn't have taken long, They had to do this, I said, kneeling down by the pit. A couple of pots, their bottoms and sides, blackened from the fires, sat on the ground, their insides wet and greasy-looking. Taylor came over and looked at the pots. This is so gross. How can anyone live like this? I looked up at them. Guys, we're not far from this ourselves. I paused for a moment to let that sink in. That kerosene for the stove isn't going to last forever, you know. You'd find a way, Dad. You always do, Leanne said, smiling at me. I could only hope that I lived up to their opinion of me. Just the thought of them and Mel squatting around a filthy fire pit like this saddened me. I could only imagine how horrible it was for these people before they finally gave up and left. Who could blame them? Before, when things were still normal, and we talked of FEMA camps with the same amount of belief as we had for unicorns, I said many a time that I would never let my family go to one. Now, looking at the desperation around me, my girls standing in the middle of it, I couldn't say the same thing. What good are freedom and liberty if you have to live like an animal in the dirt? Little Bit came trotting back over. Dad, can we leave? I don't like it here. Yeah, I'm with her. Let's go. There's no trailer here, Taylor said as she headed for the gate. It took another hour or so to find a trailer in the neighborhood. It was sitting beside a workshop behind one of the houses on the main road. Little Bit and Taylor found it, calling me over. It was a 6x8 Wells Cargo with ramp on the rear, and it was perfect for us. Dropping the ramp, I was met with a stack of cabinets. They were very nicely constructed of hard wood, already stained and sealed. Dad, those would be great at the cabin, Taylor said. I nodded my head. It would be a shame to leave them here, with nobody to use them. We walked back around to the front of the large shop. The entry door was locked, and so was the garage door. But I really wanted to look inside. So I went to the house, with the girls following me. Knowing it was probably a waste of time, I knocked on the front door and listened. In our new world, sound was almost as important as sight. After a few seconds, I knew no one was coming to the door, so I checked to see if it was unlocked. We tried all the doors, without any success. Whoever lived here was long gone, so I went back to the rear porch and broke out a window. As soon as the glass gave, a smell I recognized all too well enveloped us. Leanne, who'd always had a weak stomach, immediately began to vomit. Taylor and Little Bit covered their faces and ran. Poor Leanne was retching so hard she couldn't even walk. I had to pick her up at the waist and carry her around the side of the house, spewing the entire way. When I got there, Little Bit was crying and Taylor's eyes were watering. What is that smell? That is so disgusting! Don't know, but I'm going to go in. No, Daddy, don't go in there. Please don't go in there, Little Bit cried. I knelt down in front of her. I'll be okay, baby. Can you go to the truck and get your sister a canteen of water? Can Taylor come with me? Taylor reached out and took her hand and led her to the truck. I spun around to Leanne and checked on her. She was fine, just really queasy, and a rather unbecoming shade of green. I told her to stay put, and I'd be back in a few minutes. Tying the bandana around my face, I stepped into the house. I checked all the drawers in the kitchen, not finding anything, and then moved into the living room. It was there I found the source of the smell. He was a big man, probably in his late 50s, with a bullet wound in his head. He was fully reclined in a nice, lazy boy chair, a Colt government model, 45, laying on the floor beside him. Seeing a body like that really makes you think what was going through the person's head in their last moments to bring them to that fate. The answer to that question was on the nightstand beside the bed. An empty vial of Humalog insulin and a needle sat there. Now it was clear. He had run out of insulin and knew there was no way to get more. I made my way back toward the living room, but still couldn't locate the keys. I was frustrated by this search, and the smell was starting to get to me. Going back past the body toward the kitchen, it hit me. I knew where those keys were. I do not want to do this, I thought. I leaned over and patted his pockets. Nothing. Then, running my hands around his waist, I found them hanging from a hook on his belt. Unclipping them as carefully as I could, so as not to disturb the corpse anymore, I pulled them out. Gripping the keys firmly in my hand, I said, "Thanks." Then bent over and picked up the pistol, flipping the safety on before leaving the house. Outside, I checked on the girls, who were now all sitting in the truck. Leanne looked up at me wearily. "Dad, can we go now?" "Just hang on a minute, guys. Let me check something." "What's in there?" Taylor asked. I pressed my lips together and shook my head. She didn't need any more explanation than that. "I'll be right back," I said, as I headed for the shop. "Please let the right key be on here. I don't want to go back in there." I found it on the second try, and soon was inside what turned out to be a very nicely equipped woodworking shop. After connecting the trailer to the truck, we headed to Reggie's place. Danny was there, loading up more supplies. "Hey, Sarge, come over and check this out," I said as I got out. "This the trailer you're going to use for the power plant?" Sarge asked. "Yeah, as soon as we get these things out of here." "Let's get that hog loaded up so we can get our fuel on the way there." We caught the big boar and trussed him up and loaded him into Sarge's trailer, along with an empty drum and 4 5-gallon gas cans. Since Ted was going to stay and work with the girls, and we needed security at the barricade, this was going to be a quick run. Doc and Danny would watch the barricade, and Reggie and Thad would go with us, Thad riding with me and Reggie with Sarge. At the store, the trade went smoothly. The old woman had a couple of extra hands around to handle the hog, while others pumped the gas. Thad and I leaned against the side of the trailer, keeping a casual eye on them as they worked. Looking at the store, Thad said, "I sure wish they had some Little Debbie oatmeal pies in there." "Oh, man, those things are good. Bad for you, but good," I replied. Just thinking of those tasty little cakes gave me a sweet tooth from hell. Thad looked over and grinned. "Really bad for you, but right now, I'd eat a whole box of them." "Correction there, big fella. You eat half a box, 'cause I'd eat the other half." It didn't take long to get everything topped off. Thad reached in and checked the cans, then gave the drum a push. Looking back at me, he nodded, and I went over to Sarge, who was still entertaining the old woman. "We're ready to roll." "Come back when you're ready for more gas." Sarge smiled at her and tipped his hat. "Pleasure doing business with you." Together we walked back to the vehicles. Looking over at him, I asked, "So when's the date?" "Huh?" I looked back over my shoulder at the old woman. "You and her. You sure were making a lot of time with her. Surely you got a date set up by now." I've been around him enough now to recognize the posture, fist balled, jaw set, and one eye squinted. He was ready to fight. I immediately started to move faster. "You little shit!" he shouted as he tried to kick me, his boot brushing my ass. I jumped into the truck and locked the door. Thad smiled and leaned forward to look past me. Sarge jutted his index finger at Thad. In response, Thad held his hands up and shook his head in a not-me gesture. "Man, he's pissed," Thad said, as Sarge finally headed for his ride, giving us the finger over his shoulder all the way. "Yeah, this should be fun for days." Thad let out a loud laugh. "Yeah, go tell Mike about it. It'll give them both something to do." We made it to the cabins in short order. Jeff met us as we were getting out. Sarge jabbed his index finger at me, and Thad, yelling, "Fuck you and you!" "What the hell's that about?" Jeff asked, obviously confused. "Something about his love life," I said, as Mike headed around the corner of the cabin.
"Damn it, Morgan, I swear to God, I'll stomp a mud hole in your ass and kick it dry."
Never one to miss a beat, Mike said. Sex will have to wait, old man. We got problems.
Sarge's eyes almost rolled down his cheeks.
Holy mother of God!
Calm down, Sarge. Follow me.
Mike was chuckling as he led us toward the back of the cabin. When we rounded the corner, we could see three young men standing in the pig pen. A third strand of wire had been strung up about chest high. As we approached, I could see it was Chris, Chase's son, from up the road. The pen was small, and they were standing shoulder to shoulder.
What the hell are they doing there? Sarge barked.
We caught him inside the cabin, Jeff said.
Sarge looked at Jeff, then turned back to the boys.
What the hell you doing inside our cabins?
Two of the boys looked at the ground. Chris, however, stood there, indifferently.
We were just looking around. And it's not your cabin anyway.
Says who?
Mike raised his eyebrows and grinned at me. This kid had no idea who he was playing with.
Nobody. You guys just came out here and took them. No one said you could.
And no one said I couldn't. Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Well, then since we went in, they're ours now, Chris said, with a sarcastic smirk.
One of the other boys gave him a sideways glance.
Shut up, man. We're already in enough trouble.
So what? What's he gonna do? Call the cops?
Sorry there, smartass. No cops to save your ass now,
Sarge exclaimed.
Let's get this crap unloaded, Sarge barked. We'll deal with these fools later.
After we unloaded all the cabinets into one of the unused cabins and distributed the rest of the gear, Sarge tossed three pairs of flex cuffs to Mike.
Get him out of there, and put these on him.
Jeff turned off the hot wire, and Mike began putting the cuffs on the boys. Chris still seemed indifferent, but the boy who told him to shut up earlier was a different story. His voice shook as Mike zipped up the cuff.
What are you doing? Where are you taking us?
The lack of response from Mike only unnerved him even further, and he began to cry. Once all the boys were cuffed up, we loaded them into the truck.
What's he going to do with them?
Thad asked, as we followed Sarge down the road. I looked in the mirror at the boys, who Sarge had put in the cargo area of the truck.
I would imagine he's going to go have a talk with Chris's old man.
This should be interesting.
In short order, we were pulling up in front of Chase's house. He stepped out on the porch as we got out.
How's your girl, Chase?